America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey! Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand. You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
It is my pleasure to interview Lou Ferrigno. Lou Ferrigno is in the studio.
Good morning.
Thank you so
how
much.
Are you?
I'm sure you're as excited to be here as I am.
Oh, very. And we can see the fans. It's going to be a wonderful weekend.
That's actually what I wanted to ask you about with GalaxyCon in town and you being here for that. I was watching a podcast with Seth Green. You know who Seth Green is? The red-haired guy?
Yeah.
Child star. And he was talking about, and he was with Bill Maher, he was talking about the way that celebrity has changed since he started as a child star in the 80s. And he said that between the 80s and 90s to now, it is completely different because of the connectivity to fans that you have that used to be so isolated. And he said, it's so much better now because I can actually meet people.
Well, the difference is that we have what you call pop culture. Because years ago, you had comic book convention. So now the public, men, husband, wife, kid, they come to a comic pop culture because the fact that you get a chance to connect with the celebrities. You see the latest film, Q&A, it's like a personal touch. It's so different because everyone today knows what a Comic-Con pop culture is.
Yeah, and social media too, and you just be able to talk to people so much more. Is it to you more fun now because of that culture that didn't exist back in the 70s, 80s?
Oh, much more, because the fact that sometimes you own my own dentist, sometimes you have doctors, they dress up as a Trekkie or as a Hulk, they come to the convention, because everybody wants that superhero connection.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask you a comic book question. I'm glad you kind of led into that, because this is a nerdy question, but with Marvel resurgent, you know, Marvel's coming back huge, and you're like the original of the like Marvel superheroes. Do you have a new generation of fans that are kind of discovering the Hulk and going, oh my gosh, and like rediscovering you even?
Oh yeah, because a lot of fans, for example, three decades, they see the new film.
Yeah.
But they go back to the original because they told the kids this is the real Hulk. Because when I portrayed the Hulk was human, it's not CGI, it's different. But the fact that my series is so popular because every episode had a message about life. It's different today, so it led to today. That's why today it's CGI is completely different. You have a bigger storyline with different adventures, just superheroes.
Yeah, I heard you on the Mark Cox Morning Show yesterday talking about the work that you do. You're a motivational speaker.
Yeah, I love to motivate people, especially overcoming fear, maximizing your personal power, because, everybody is handicapped one way or another. The fact that, it could be any kind of disability, any kind of physical problem, you're going to attack and fix it.
So GalaxyCon is going on right now. Very, very exciting. This is the first time I think it's been in St. Louis, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. And great lineup. Lou Ferrigno, of course, in studio with us right now. What exactly, I've heard you answer this question already, but I was fascinated when you were talking about it. I can't believe you said you're 74 years old. If I'm 74 years old and I look like you, I'm going to be very happy. What is your workout regimen now?
Very simple. I do machines, high repetition. I train body part twice a week, and I do cardio 3 to 4 days a week, like 40, 50 minutes. And the most important thing of all, eating healthy. Eat good, sleep good, and train good, and don't overindulge bad food, fried food, stuff like that.
Make America healthy again is the movement.
Exactly, yeah.
Have you been in touch with the people running the MAHA movement? Have they talked to you?
Well, not yet, because I was on the President's Council of Physical Fitness with Trump about that. The last time he was president.
Right.
Not much came about it, but now because you have Robert Kennedy Jr. advocating health and the whole, because this country has a lot to do with obesity,
mm-hmm.
and especially kids taking meds, Venator, playing with the iPhone, watching TV, not taking action for themselves, doing physical activities. Because when I grew up in Brooklyn, I played handball, stickball, running competition. We didn't have iPhones. It's all about that connection. personal connection. But today it's much more isolated. We need to bring that back.
Mm-hmm. Lou Ferrigno is in studio and in town. If you want to meet him, I saw the lineup at GalaxyCon. My gosh, a lot of great people going to be here. I saw William Shatner. Giancarlo Esposito, who plays Moff Gideon, is going to be here. I mean, it's a great lineup.
You know what's funny? William Shatner is going to be 95 years old.
That is amazing.
He's my hero. I mean, think about it. This man, they're still doing Comic-Con. It's unbelievable because I think at his time when he was doing Star Trek, they didn't have Comic-Con.
Right.
But today, that's why he's appreciation.
But he's the original Comic-Con guy. I mean, it was almost like the industry was created around him and Star Trek, and now he's here. I mean, that's just cool. Let me ask you before we run out of time, though. You're still acting. You're still in lots of stuff. What's the last couple projects you're working on, or what can we look for you in soon?
Well, I did a horror film called The Hermit. It's a cannibalistic pig farmer. It makes beef jerkies out of people. It's like a Hannibal Lecter in the woods. And then I have a comedy coming out. I have an action movie called Hard Redemption, where I play a security guard, and this gang takes over the school. So me and this other guy named Gino King, he's a grandmaster, so the two of us, we take on this whole gang. It's great because there's a lot of physical action.
Yeah.
Because I love doing action film.
That sounds fun. Yeah. Are they out? Are these movies out now?
They're all coming out after the first of the year.
Okay, all right. And say the names of them again one more time.
Hard Redemption, and the other one called The Hermit.
Okay, The Hermit and Redemption.
Yeah, and then there's another movie called Flash Before the Bang. It's about this track and field kid that have a lot of opposition against them, try to win the championship. And then if you get a chance, check it out. It's a wonderful film.
Well, Lou Ferrigno, great to meet you. Great to talk to you. I hope it's a fantastic event this weekend. I know there's a lot of buzz about it. So
thank you.
I expect to hear that it's been a great event as we go about this weekend. Thank you for being here. This is Wiggins America. We will be right back.
And now, an excerpt from The Grocery List, a book by Ryan Wiggins.
The hardest part about people isn't the emotional stuff. It's the bones.
The Grocery List, Food for Thought, by Ryan Wiggins. You're listening to 97.1 FM Talk.
The Supreme Court began its fall session this week, and there are, as usual these days, big, big cases. Some of them are a little less cultural this time and more specific to the way Trump is going to be able to operate, although some of them are definitely cultural. One of them that I got a chance to talk about with Mark Cox was this Second Amendment case. Now, this is very near and dear to his heart, so he knew more about this one than I did, but I figured I should mention it before we jump into the hit that I did with him and summarize the whole thing, is that the Supreme Court agreed to hear oral arguments this winter sometime in a challenge to a Hawaii law that makes it a crime for someone who is a concealed carry permit to carry a handgun on private property without the property owner's affirmative permission. So that may be specific to the language there. The announcement that the justices will take up Wolford versus Lopez came as a part of a short list of cases from the court's long conference this past Monday, at which they considered all the petitions that became ripe for review during the justices' summer recess. So with that in mind, let's jump into the big cases the Supreme Court's going to be taking on this fall, which I talked about with Mark Cox.
Wow, Wiggins America.
We'll start with what they call voting rights and black majority districts. We would call this racial gerrymandering.
Ah, okay.
And the reason why this is important is because for a long time, the Supreme Court, I should say, the law of the land, I think it was determined by the Supreme Court a long time ago, was that you can't draw racially gerrymandered districts.
Unless the court orders you to draw a racially gerrymandered district.
Well, the argument here before the court will be that why, and Justice Clarence Thomas has even argued for outlawing the use of race in drawing districts at all.
Yes.
Because what you're saying then when you draw a racial gerrymander is that all of this racial group, they think this way. And all of this group, they think this way. And that is unconstitutional. You can't do that. Now, they've done that to white people for a long time, but to any minority group, black, Hispanic, Asian, you can say, oh, they have to be separated out for representation. And the argument is that that cannot happen anymore. And you can see in recent elections, racial groups are not a monolith. And that is the way they've been treated by districts. And so that is before the Supreme Court. I have a suspicion that that might get turned in the direction of against what it has been for a long time.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the like Congressional District 1 in the city, that's one thing they don't mess with because the court ordered that that's the way it had to look. So if they do change that, it may be interesting the next time we redraw congressional districts, maybe CD1 looks a lot different. And it's actually a competitive district, which it's certainly not right now by any stretch of the imagination.
Thus far, Democrats have basically used this to keep districts in their control.
You mean like in your home state?
Yes.
Like Illinois? Where there are 17 Democrat districts and 3 Republican districts?
Well, there are certain states where, like Louisiana, where this would very much affect certain districts because they're like, look, we could draw these completely differently, but because of the racial law, we can't.
Okay.
And so it would actually benefit Republicans to sort of open this back up and not create majority-minority districts, which has been really, it's just been political. That's people have used it because it benefits Democrats and it would be going away if the Supreme Court overturned it. So the next one, big one for Trump. Trump and tariffs. Does President Trump have the legal authority acting on his own to import taxes on products coming from otherwise friendly countries? Trump is relying on a 1977 law that empowers the president to act when faced with an unusual or extraordinary threat. As we saw during COVID, how do you define an unusual threat or an extraordinary threat? Anytime it's emergency powers, there's no real definition as to what a executive authority can be because there's no constitutional definition of emergency.
So that's the question they're addressing here?
So that would be the main question they're addressing, is that 1977 law. Is that written so that the president can use threats as a means to tariffs or not?
The thing about it is a threat and it is an emergency. But it's been the norm for so long that people don't look at it that way again. Donald Trump's been calling it an emergency since the 1980s, and he couldn't get the get along crowd in Washington to pay any attention to it because they were all getting their pockets squeezed.
Yeah. And if the president doesn't have the power, who does? Right. That would be the other question for me.
Right.
We still need trade policy.
Congress
right?
gave him the power to do that.
Right. And from Carter, when that law was first put into place in 77, Carter was the big boycott president, right? He boycotted everything and everybody. Boycotts work the same as tariffs as well. It is a trade policy of saying, I'm not going to deal with this country, or if I am going to deal with this country, we're going to tax their imports.
Yes.
Or their exports, whichever one we want to do. And if the president doesn't have that control, who does? Will the Supreme Court make that ruling of saying, if it's not you, Mr. President, you need to go through this process?
Yes, that's exactly what they will decide, because this power, the tariff authority originally was supposed to be through Congress, but Congress may have delegated that authority through this law.
That's
what's up for question here.
Uh-huh.
The next one is transgender athletes in school sports. This all has to do with Title IX. In the past, Title IX has been used, it was intended, to protect girls'
women.
Sports.
Yeah,
now
make it equal, right?
Yes, now it's been flipped to protect transgender athletes going into girls' sports. And the Trump administration is, of course, saying that's not the original intent of this law. They're correct in that. Will the Supreme Court decide with them? My suspicion is that they will, but we'll see.
That gender-born will determine what sport you play in, team you play. Now, I actually am one who thinks women should have the right to go play in a man's sport if they're good enough, right? Annika Sorenstam tried to play on the PGA Tour. She didn't make it. I don't think she ever made a cut in the year she played, but she was the greatest woman golfer of all time. She tried to make it on the men's tour. I encourage that, but this you know, you're a weak man, so let's go down and play with the women. You know, that's just taking the rights away from women and the ability to get scholarships and other things if you have these trans. And all they have to do is pretty much declare it.
So this,
you know, I'm going
to Cassandra Brown Jackson. Yeah,
what determines
the old question of what is a woman? Well, right. If you just say you are, does that mean you are? I guess it does.
Ketanji Jackson couldn't tell you.
This particular case, though, is about states. It's not actually about Trump so much as it is about states being able to say, because there's a mixture of them. Some of them are saying, no, you can't play in girls' sports. Some are saying you can. And so they're trying to define, well, can states just define this locally? My guess is that they'll say, yeah, you can just define it locally, and you'll have a hodgepodge of laws.
Will it include sports and spaces? In other words, can they dress in women's locker rooms, too? Is that going to be on
I don't know specifically whether it'll address that or not. My guess is that it might, especially if it involves locker rooms with sports.
Yeah.
But I don't think it goes outside of sports because these are laws about sports. Trump and independent agencies. May the president fire officials of independent agencies who were appointed with fixed terms set by Congress. So far, the Supreme Court and courts have said he can, but this specifically is about Congress saying you are approved for a four-year term. So can the president step into the middle of a term that's been approved by Congress and say, you've lost your job like that Federal Reserve lady who committed
mortgage fraud? You're fired. Yeah. But the difference there is I think the president appoints those people.
Yeah.
Joe Biden appointed her in that particular case. If the presidential position is the one that appoints, they should also be the one that can take away.
Right.
I don't understand how they could protect her. So it'll be interesting to see where these
Fed
go.
The Fed is not a fourth branch of government, which is the way they're acting. Right.
Yeah. Wiggins America.
There is one more case that we ran out of time to talk about, and I kind of held it back thinking that one would take up the oxygen of the whole room if I jumped right into that one, so I tried to hit as many as I could as fast as I could. But there is one more. Here's the big one that we did not get to talk about that last morning, which is conversion therapy. In the past, this has been called gay conversion therapy, as in if you are... especially with minors. I don't know that it applies to adults as much. But with minors, if you are feeling homosexual thoughts, you are not. There are some states that say you are not allowed to go to therapy and be counseled for that or out of that, which is crazy. But the amazing thing is, listen to this. I'll just read from what Yahoo has listed as this Supreme Court case. Does a licensed mental health counselor have a First Amendment right to talk to patients under 18 about changing their sexual orientation? That would be the case. Or gender identity, even if doing so is prohibited by state law. Now, do you follow what that's saying there? In the past, states, usually blue states, of course, that's going to be blue states, that have banned sexual conversion therapy, especially for minors, may be subject now to their own law, which means they might try to repeal it. But the Supreme Court could address this. Now, the Yahoo article does not say this, but it says California in 2012 was the first state to ban conversion therapy, believing it was harmful to minors and leads to depression and suicide. Come up with ridiculous reasons, whatever it was. Other states followed, relying on their authority to regulate the practice of medicine and to prohibit standardized care or substandard care. The Alliance Defending Freedom, a Christian legal group, sued on behalf of a Colorado counselor and argued that the state censoring her free speech to be argued on this next session. But do you catch what's happening here? The Supreme Court could look at these laws and say, well, yes, they are infringing on a counselor's free speech rights to talk to anybody, especially a minor, about conversion therapy if they want to be counseled for homosexual feelings and they don't want them. That would be called conversion therapy. I don't know why it's got this weird stigma attached to it, but it does. But the reverse of that is true now. Are you catching this? It's crazy. Because when those laws were passed, nobody was thinking about counselors counseling people into conversion. Because now you have mental health professionals, quote unquote, who counsel kids, a lot of times autistic kids, into gender conversion. Would that now be considered part of that state law? It's not being applied that way, but could the Supreme Court look at it that way? That's what I find very, very interesting about this topic, because you have the First Amendment angle, but then you also have the minors angle in, you know, how can an adult talk to a minor? Can an adult convince a minor of something? Is that considered protected speech? Woo! It's kind of circled back around, hasn't it? That's a very, very interesting case, and I'll be very, very closely watching that one, because it's fascinating to me that a lot of times this happens, that the progressive wing of any party in the United States at any given moment, and this could happen at any time in American history, would pass something thinking, yeah, this will be the next wave, and then they're handcuffed by their own laws when they've gone past them. That's kind of what this looks like to me, but again, we'll be watching it. All right, this segment's gone long. Let's take a short break. Be right back. Trisha's back. Oh, my gosh. Hi.
Woo! Hi.
It's so great to have you here.
It's so great to be here.
I'm really glad to hear that, because if you said otherwise, I would say this is going to be a really short segment.
That would be it.
You want to do some serious questions?
I do.
Serious question.
If you've never heard serious questions before, this is where we bring you a story from the week or from since the last time we did serious questions, which honestly is like 6 months.
Yeah, it's been a very long time.
It's been a while.
Thank you for finally asking me to come back.
Yeah, it's been on me, for
sure. I've been standing outside the studio every time you do your show, just waiting. I got a little sign made that says, please welcome, please ask me back.
I think that's the problem. Is that I thought you were homeless.
I thought you were begging. See that. Yeah. The dollar signs on my sign, is that sending the wrong message?
Please ask me back.
Please ask me back.
It's written on cardboard.
Please help.
You had that big scruffy beard.
Anything helps.
Any airtime helps. all right, serious questions. We ask a question, or we read you a story, and then ask a serious question about that story. My first one is this, Trisha. TSA has been forced to explain that your Costco card is not a valid form of ID at the airport after a viral rumor.
What?
People were showing up at the airport thinking, yeah, I can just show them my Costco card.
And that doesn't work, huh?
Turns out many Americans were believing that internet rumor that Costco cards could be used for identification at the airport, and that TSA had to issue an official statement clearing up any confusion.
Hmm.
Serious question.
Serious question.
You ever been to Costco?
Yes, I have. And actually, we just got a Sam's card.
Ah, see, that's where I was going with this, is which one's better. Because I have literally never been to a Costco.
So I went to a Costco, the one in South County, on a very busy day, and it was not fun. It was very chaotic. I went to Sam's on what should have been a busy day, on a Saturday, and it was very pleasant. So at Sam's, and I don't know if Costco does this now too, at Sam's you can scan as you go, so you can pay for your items in your cart as you shop, and then just walk right out the store at the end.
Oh, that's the future.
Super convenient. I felt like an adult when we got our Sam's. Like, as a kid, yeah. I always thought, like, people with Sam's or Costco cards were, like, grown up and in some kind of club, and, like, you had to have money to go get the good deals.
It is
deals.
A club.
And now we're in it. It feels pretty
Are you
good.
Still in it?
Yeah. It's only been 2 weeks. So we just got our Sam's. I'm like, it's, like, fresh.
That's very recent.
Yes.
I had a Sam's Club card for a while back when I worked out in West County, because the gas was just so much cheaper.
Yep.
But the problem is now I only go to Sam's Club in Illinois, where the gas is, yes, cheaper compared to Illinois.
But
it's not cheaper than Missouri.
Yeah.
So it's not really worthwhile. But I got the card, and this is a marriage issue. I'm going to air it out here right on
the
radio.
It's a good place, good time to do that. I'm sure Katie will appreciate it.
My wife said, we really should get a Sam's Club card. I'll use it because I'll order things, and it's right by her work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pick them up on my way home. I won't have to go in. I'll just order them and go pick them up. You know how many times she did that in that 1 year?
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Twice.
Zero. It was none. She did not do it.
The intention was there.
I don't even know if she went to Sam's Club at all the entire year.
I'm going to be honest. I'm not sure if we're ever going to go back. We went twice the first weekend we got the card. That might be it, but it was cool.
Yeah, because you buy in bulk.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need 1,000 zero bars, mm-hmm. unless you're me, in which case I would go through 1,000 zero bars in 1 weekend. But I went quite a bit, and I didn't hate it. I liked it, but there were only certain things that I was getting, and I'm like, I don't think it's really, the savings isn't beating the amount that I paid for the membership. So it wasn't like a bad, I didn't hate having it, but I also felt pressured to use it because I had the card.
Yeah. You've never been inside a Costco?
Never.
Yeah. It's very similar. If you know what Sam's is, you know what Costco is.
My friend who lives in Japan, it was almost like a religion for him to go to Costco every weekend, take the whole family. It was an event. And then they moved to Japan and they, I kid you not, found a Costco in Japan that they will make pilgrimages to.
Costco's like a cult. They've got the cult thing like Aldi does. Aldi's got a cult thing going on too. Sam's doesn't have it, but from everything I can tell being in both, it's basically the same store.
Yeah, why doesn't Sam's have it?
I don't know.
Because Costco does.
They do. Yep.
And everybody's like, oh yeah, you go in there and get a dollar hot dog. I'm like, I could get a package of hot dogs for a dollar. That's not, I guess it's a deal, but
they have discount food at Sam's too.
Exactly.
It's like it's the same store.
Exactly.
I don't know, but people, yeah. Costco gets all the cred.
All right. Well,
Heinz settles debate on whether you should keep ketchup in the fridge or the cupboard.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Now Heinz, you got my attention.
Heinz has settled the debate on whether to store ketchup in the fridge or the cupboard, advising that it should be refrigerated after opening to maintain its tangy taste.
It should be refrigerated.
It should be refrigerated.
That's obvious, right? I mean, that's what we all did.
Well, but restaurants don't.
Oh, that's true.
Yep. And ultimately, the storage location depends on personal preference, household environment, and available space. So it doesn't sound like a safety thing, more of like a flavor preservation.
So you can leave it out.
Depending on what you want to do, yeah.
Huh.
But they say refrigerate it. Serious question.
Serious question.
Why is mustard so much better than ketchup?
Mustard is not better than ketchup. Wait now. Are you talking about plain American yellow mustard?
Yes. And the other kinds.
No, it's not.
It like a lot better.
We've had this discussion, not this very discussion, but a discussion about mustard on the Andy Fry Show before.
Oh, I should listen.
Yeah, you should sometime tune in.
Noon to 3?
Yep.
Weekdays?
Weekdays.
On this station?
So not today, but you come back Monday.
But if I tune in on Monday, I could hear that show?
The Andy Fry Show. Yeah.
Very cool.
I'm on it.
You are?
Yeah.
Wow.
When we had the discussion about mustard that time, mm-hmm. I had to admit, it was like a confessional. I am addicted to buying fancy mustards.
Like Grey Poupon.
Not even that. Like, yes, but that's not what really gets me going. I'll be at some sort of store or on vacation or, you know, somewhere where they have lots of the jarred foods.
Somebody's got the homemade crafted mustard with basil in it or
some
whatever.
Some random place where you go. I went to an apple farm a year ago and they had a little shop there. And I'm like, oh, I don't know why I wouldn't get 4 or 5 of these mustards. Because they all looked good and fancy, and I used them once on a sandwich, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the greatest sandwich I've ever had in my life.
Never use them again.
And never use it again.
They're still in the back of your cupboard.
Yes, they are. Well, do I refrigerate those, smart guy?
No.
We refrigerate our regular mustard.
Do you? Mm-hmm. Actually, I do too. But
is there anything
imagine
that you don't? I always feel weird not refrigerating syrup.
No, we do refrigerate syrup. Yeah, we refrigerate pretty much anything that's open.
Yeah, we kind of do too.
Except for peanut butter.
Well, I think that's pretty obvious.
Is that
normal? I don't think anybody's refrigerating peanut butter. But right. Syrup? Somebody weigh in. At Radio Wiggins, do you refrigerate syrup or not? Because now I need to know. Last serious question story is, woman takes dealership's name after her car was repossessed. There's a bit of a story here. In February 2024, a woman bought a car and signed documents for financing at Taylor Kia of Lima. This is in Arizona. In those purchase and financing documents, the woman signed a document that said she would agree to arbitration, not court proceedings, to settle matters with the dealership if anything went awry. So upon investigating, and then the woman left with the vehicle, but the financing entity that was a part of this stated that it did not have sufficient information about her purchase to finalize the loan. So she did it right there on site, signed whatever they were giving her, and then the lending agency said, oh no, we didn't get enough documentation from you. So a month later, while the woman was at work, Taylor Kia repossessed her car.
Yikes. And she had no heads
up. She didn't know.
Because she thought she had done everything correctly and they had given her keys.
And then so legally, Taylor Keel was correct. They did have the right to do that. But I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It was their fault for not giving her all. I mean, you don't know what you're signing in half of those things. So upon investigating her legal options, this woman discovers that the legal name of the dealership, Taylor Kia of Lima, had been canceled by the, oh, I'm sorry, I said Arizona, Ohio, Secretary of State, due to failure to submit a renewal. So the woman registered that name herself, so she now owns the name Taylor Kia of Lima.
Payback.
She also sent a cease and desist letter to Taylor Cadillac, the parent company, to stop using the name Taylor Kia of Lima. She also filed a complaint against Taylor Cadillac and the financer over the car deal and sought an injunction about the issue with the dealership's name.
Is there anything she can do? I know you have a serious question. I don't want to derail it too much, but having the naming rights to something like that, is there anything, any monetary gain, or is it purely vindictive?
That's a good question. It's working its way through courts. And it looks to me from reading this like she would be willing to settle. However, they kind of kept pushing. And so she said, fine, I'm just going to keep pushing too. And now there's really no chance of reconciliation. They're just going
to
fight.
I guess what the goal would be to want them to buy the name back from you.
I guess. Yeah. Because she legally owns it, mm-hmm. and it is working its way through the Third District Court of Appeals, but then it's been sent back down, just popping
You're
around.
A judge. This comes across your desk.
Oh, like, my gosh. What is happening? This is the kind of stuff I would become a judge for, as this and, like, coming up with creative.
You're like ooh, juicy.
You're going to be this person's butler from now
punishment.
On.
Punishment. Yeah, creative punishment.
Yeah. I just think this story is fascinating, and I love this kind of stuff. My serious question is...
Serious question.
Have you ever gone by a different name?
Nicknames count?
That would count.
My parents called me Bean when I was little.
Until about what age?
Probably older than they should have. 14, maybe 15. Yeah. You know,
no, that's okay.
It's getting a little on the line, but I was their kid.
I like it.
And my maiden name is Seekman, so my good friend used to call me Trisha Geekman.
Oh, that's creative.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did get called some names with the last name of Wiggins. I can't repeat them, but I think you can creatively come up with what they might be. None of them stuck, though.
Huh.
And I really take pride in the fact that I never really had a strong nickname. People tried, but I think I was the person who dished out nicknames a little bit
Show
more.
Off.
Yeah, a little bit. And I never really had one.
If you were to make a nickname for yourself, what would it be, since you're the nickname maker?
Chicken stripper.
Chicken stripper.
Yeah. You go a lot of ways with it. Mm-hmm. You go the hooker route, which I'm a big fan of.
Obviously.
But you'd have to be a chicken that was offering your body for money.
You get confused as a chicken offering your body for money often, so it makes sense to call you that. I like that you put some time into that.
Well, I'd be remiss if I let this whole show go and didn't talk about Grandma. So my grandma was 93. She passed away this week. And one of the nice things about having a radio show is being able to pay tribute to the people in your life that you love. We talked about her while she was listening last week on the Annie Fry Show. My dad texted, hey, me and Grandma are listening. So we just talked about them right then. And Brad, the producer for the Annie Fry Show, made a video out of us discussing that. So not only did she hear that, but then she saw this video. My son, Sinjin, who is her great-grandson, the other day, we were going over to visit Grandma, and he goes, why is it? And he was genuine about this. He said, how is it that Grandma makes you feel so important?
Oh.
I was like, I don't know, buddy, but it's true.
Because you are, and she is.
And then I was like, Sinjin, you need to leave the room so I can tell Grandma what you said without you here.
How'd she feel about that?
Oh, I mean, it's just, I'm tearing up even saying it. Like, it's amazing.
How does Grandma make you feel so important?
And he was 100% asking me, because I know she's got other grandkids and great-grandkids, but I feel so, like, I'm so important to
That's
her.
That's love, buddy.
I know.
Oh, and there's no love like a grandma, like a grandparent's love.
Yeah, she just made us feel important, and she was having trouble speaking because she was having trouble breathing these last few months, but it was a gift that we even got to spend this much time with her because she got really bad in May. And we love Grandma. We love you, Grandma. And gonna miss you. And she was funny, man. She told a lot of really funny stories when she could. Now, she wasn't able to speak as much these last few months. But even the night before she died, I was over there just kind of visiting a little bit, and she even cracked a joke, and I'm gonna tell you what that joke was, just because it's the last joke I'll ever remember from my grandma. Is my mom was getting her something out of the freezer to eat, and she said, "Do you want me to? I'm gonna go ahead and prepare this, even if you're not hungry, because it was trouble to get her to eat lately, you know." And she said, "Well, that's through breaths." That's not making anything when you pull it out of the freezer. That's melting something. So I was like, it's pretty good. Pretty good, Grandma. And, you know, in between breaths, she had to, like, get that joke out. But she grew up in the Depression. You know, she grew up picking tomatoes in this area during the Depression. And she told me, I don't know if you're familiar with the giant ketchup bottle in Collinsville. That's where I'm from. But she told me that she used to pick tomatoes for Brooks, and Brooks Ketchup is the ketchup bottle. There, I don't think there is a brand anymore associated with the ketchup bottle. The bottle itself is famous. But she says she used to pick tomatoes for that company when it was a company. So, like, we have longtime connections to the old ketchup bottle, too, in Collinsville. But anyway, I just wanted to close the show by saying that, because it's really all I'm thinking about this week. I'm sure that you've dealt with a death before of somebody close to you, and the whole world just kind of goes away. We do news here, and so I don't want to say any of the news that we ever talk about is unimportant, but it's like it dims everything when somebody in your life dies. And so talking about the news has been weird this week as of Wednesday, because she died on Tuesday night after I was there, apparently. Wednesday and on, you know, it's just been like nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. And so that's why I invited Trisha in to joke a little bit and have a good time, just to avoid the news a little bit. But if you want to catch up on the news that we did talk about, you know, that's why we're here, is to talk about current events and everything going on and the things that are important, things that are unimportant. We like to focus on the things that are, of course. And in this case, Grandma's important. And Grandma's with Jesus now because she believed. We got to take communion with her on Sunday at her house. We didn't even know that was happening. We just showed up for a visit with the whole family, and her minister showed up. We ought to take communion together. Little things like that, man. Huge gifts. Huge gifts to us. But you can get this whole podcast and hear more of the news that we didn't do in the last couple segments by typing in Wiggins America. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much.